In the years since 1985, when Danny Meyer opened his first restaurant, the Union Square Cafe, his company has grown to include 15 of New York's most iconic restaurants, cafes, and bars, including Gramercy Tavern, Blue Smoke, and The Modern. Today, they have earned a total of 28 James Beard Awards and 4 Michelin stars. In addition, he also founded the internationally franchised Shake Shack Burgers chain and was one of the founders of the annual Big Apple Barbecue in Madison Square Park. Mr. Meyer, the 2017 recipient of the third ever Julia Child Award, joins us now to discuss how Julia Child influenced some of his business choices early on in his career, as well as what the future of hospitality looks like. I'm very pleased to welcome Danny Meyer, CEO and founder of Union Square Hospitality Group, back to our show. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Leonard. Always great to see you.
You're the first person who's not a chef to win the Julia Child Award. Were you surprised when they gave it to you?
I was completely surprised, and it was kind of a neat juxtaposition because the phone call I got back in March, which I was sworn to secrecy on, I forget how long they wanted me to keep my mouth shut, but I was in the parking lot across the street from Chez Panisse in Berkeley about to have lunch there, and the juxtaposition of learning about this award and about to go see Alice Waters was just kind of too spooky to be true.
Well, we're talking about Julia Child's influence, but were you also influenced by what Alice Waters was doing at the time?
I think all of us have been. I think if you go back into the, Julia, I knew who Julia was much, much earlier than
Well, she was a presence on television. She wrote classic cookbooks.
She did, and growing up in St. Louis, I would watch Julia on, the public TV station. And we, back then, home cooking was just utilitarian. And if you wanted to eat something really special or exotic, you either had to go to a special occasion restaurant or you would have to go travel to France or something. So to have somebody make accessible in our own home kitchen those things that you used to have to travel for was really quite something.
But you did do some of that traveling because your father was involved in hospitality in a different way?
My dad was in the travel business. He was the first American agent for a group of small hotels, which back then was called Relais de Compagnie and later became Relais and Chateau. And I remember at the age of 7 writing in my diary after my first trip to France how much I had loved things like fraise des bois and creme fraiche and quiche Lorraine. And when my sister, Nancy, cooked Julia Child's recipe for quiche Lorraine for our home when I was about 9 years old, it was an epiphany for me.
Other kids might very well have not wanted to eat it because it was strange stuff. I've always wondered about why some children are so open to new things and some only want to eat the same 5 things.
Well, probably because our dog was named Ratatouille and we were forced to experience all kinds of things at an early age.
Did you ever think of becoming a chef, or were you always more interested in the business side of the restaurant industry?
I never thought about even being in the restaurant business because it's not what a guy with a liberal arts education was supposed to do back then. But when I finally decided, take the LSATs but don't go to law school, it occurred to me it would be fun to do it, and the only way I could break it to my parents was to tell them I was going to be a chef, because that was actually, in 1984, way more acceptable than saying I'm going to be a restaurateur, which was considered a pretty shady profession.
The award comes with a $50,000 prize that's donated to a charity of the recipient's choice, the Julia Child Award. What organization have you chosen?
Well, it took me about 3 seconds to make the decision. Share Our Strength is a fantastic Washington, D.C.-based organization on whose board I've served for a number of years, and it's their No Kid Hungry campaign that I think Julia would have really embraced.
I've thought a lot about the word hospitality in relation to people like you. Pretty much every restaurateur I've met, there are exceptions, but especially chefs, have this real strong sense of generosity. Maybe that's why they got into the field. They like giving on some level. Have you thought about that?
Absolutely.
I think that's why there's so many charities that have been created by restaurateurs and chefs.
And even if they hadn't been created by them, think how many restaurants and chefs give of their heart beyond the four walls of their restaurant. I happen to be incredibly inspired by the work that a chef, Jose Andres, is doing in Puerto Rico right now. And he is bringing hospitality where it is most needed.
Didn't Julia Child come in for dinner at the Union Square Cafe shortly after it first opened?
Oh boy, did she ever. That was
that must have scared you.
It scared me, and I was about as flabbergasted tableside as I could be. It was early on, and I'll never forget, because the day after she came, it was her birthday, which was a huge compliment to have Julia Child. That would be as if you had a little church and the Pope decided to come one night.
Although it was a hot restaurant at the time.
It was busy, but still, between Julia Child and Craig Claiborne, that was royalty. So she came in, and the very, very next day, I got a letter with the New York Times on the return envelope, and I got very excited. I said, maybe we're finally getting reviewed by the New York Times. And I opened the letter, and it wasn't what I expected or hoped. It was a very, very angry letter from the managing editor of the New York Times saying how awful his hospitality had been the night before. And he said it was very, very clear who mattered to you last night and who didn't. We were at the table immediately next to Julia Child, where you spent 90% of your evening fawning over her while we were waiting for our food. I learned a pretty important lesson that night, which is, when you have someone really important in the restaurant, take care of them last.
But she also used to write letters.
She never failed to write a thank you note. It was just remarkable. She ended up coming to the restaurant many times in her lifetime. Each time she took the time to handwrite a note to say thank you. Actually, she typed it.
Did she make suggestions?
I don't recall any suggestions. One day I had the opportunity to have lunch with her at Union Square Cafe. And the biggest suggestion she gave me that day was to please not skimp on the butter. She said, your portion size of butter on the table is way too small, and you're offending those of us who know how to eat good food.
You had done a segment with her on Good Morning America that day.
I had. My wife, Audrey, worked at Gourmet Magazine, and her colleague, Sarah Moulton, moonlighted as Julia's, food director for her Good Morning America shows. And they had asked if we wanted to do a scene in our home kitchen with Julie. And I said, well, who the heck wouldn't? That'd be fun. That was quite a day, Leonard. I've got to tell you, I'll never forget. We spent about 4 hours, and following the tour of the kitchen, we did an interview in my apartment, but they only brought one cameraman. So each time she asked me a question, the camera would be on her. And when she was done asking all the questions, they had to move the camera behind her, at which point she fell over and slumped with her head between her legs. And I swear to God, I thought Julia Child had passed away in my apartment.
She was just getting out of the way.
She was just taking a little nap because she knew she wasn't on camera. And I said, this is all I need for my career right now. But after that, we walked the four blocks to Union Square Cafe, and she was getting stopped by taxi cabs who all knew her.
She was on the show a number of times, and I did live events with her at the 92nd Street Y and elsewhere. Thank God she never fell asleep during those times. But she was always pleased when somebody who didn't look like the kind of person you'd expect to recognized her. Once elevator repairmen in our building, she was just so thrilled. The guy said, ain't you Julia Child?
Well, she was a real person, and she loved making people happy.
I'm speaking with Danny Meyer, another real person and the man of a great achievement in the restaurant business. You've written about a concept you call enlightened hospitality. What's that?
Enlightened hospitality is basically saying that the real reason people come to work and the real reason people go to restaurants and the real reason people want a restaurant in their community is to feel better. And it basically says that even though we were taught growing up by people like Adam Smith and Milton Friedman that if you take care of the investor first, everything else is going to follow, we've learned counterintuitively that that doesn't actually work, that the best way to create happy investors is to put them last, and the best way to create happy customers is to actually put your customers second to your own team.
So, Danny, why did an investor in a restaurant once say to me, the way to make a small fortune in the restaurant business is to start off with a large fortune?
I've heard that before. I'd like to disprove that person if possible.
But you do say that 75% of all new restaurant ventures fail. You said that in your book, Setting the Table.
Well, I think that in the old days, that number might have been even higher. And the primary reason was that restaurants would not have enough funding to last beyond the point at which you knew they existed. Today, it's not hard at all to let the world know your restaurant exists. We don't have to wait till Leonard Lopate talks about it on his show. Someone will have blogged about it the day before you open. The word gets out. Now the challenge is, it's not can you get people to try it? The real question is, can you get people to return? So I would say that to the degree that there's a high failure rate in restaurants, it's no longer within the first year. It's probably in the first 2 years.
So how do you get people to return? Is it a matter of training your staff to be gracious and hospitable without being over solicitous?
It's two things, I would say. It's number one, realizing that the minute somebody walks in your door, they are looking for reasons to either believe or disbelieve that they made the right choice. And your staff has to pick up on all those cues right off the bat. We don't know how to train people to be thoughtful or nice. We do know how to hire people who have the emotional wiring already to care. Go back to what you said earlier about restaurateurs in general, chefs especially. We want to hire the kind of chef who, when he was a kid or she was a kid, made the chocolate chip cookies not just for the purpose of eating them, but for the purpose of seeing the joy on their parents' face when they presented them. That's the kind of person we're trying to hire.
What are some of the worst faux pas servers can make, other than coming to the table and saying, how are things going?
Well, you just gave a great example because that falls under the category.
Why do I hate that so much?
The same reason I do. It's completely disingenuous. I think the biggest mistake servers can make is to act like they are restaurant people and stop being humans. If the goal of a restaurant experience is that you feel at home when you go out, which is kind of counterintuitive, but I think that's what people want, why would I speak to you in a way that I would never speak in my own home? I wouldn't say, how is everything? I wouldn't say, will the lady be having the salmon? I wouldn't say,
are you guys finished?
Are you still working on that? Yeah. I wouldn't say those things. I would be real and I would say, may I clear your plate?
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't ask a question that I don't want an honest answer to. If I ask you, how is everything? You think I really want to hear your answer? I don't have all night.
And you know the answer is going to be, it's great, it's fine. You're also credited with pioneering the idea of fine casual dining with your burger chain. We've talked in the past about how you came to create Shake Shack, but did you ever imagine it would become such an international success?
No, absolutely not. We were basically trying to create a reason for people to use Madison Square Park to keep it safe and hopefully create an ongoing revenue stream for the park, and happily it did both.
And how many cities are you in now?
Oh, I don't even know exactly, but I think there's about 142 Shake Shacks in the world right now, including in places like Seoul, South Korea, Tokyo, London, Moscow.
Could you have opened a Union Square Cafe in London?
I think we've had many, many opportunities to do that. We've chosen not to do that so far. I have a love affair with a lot of places in the world, and sometimes I feel like it's wiser for me to go to those cities without necessarily working in those cities.
But do you think also, well, you're also all over New York City with the Shake Shacks. Do you think it's because you had that fine dining experience that you have found a way to make the Shake Shack so popular?
Well, I think what Shake Shack has happily been able to succeed at, and others are certainly following this as well, from the fine dining industry, is to say, wait a second, fast food has been a brilliant business idea, whether or not you enjoy eating fast food. They basically said, as many have, out of quality, speed, and price, you can have any two. So fast food basically said, all right, we'll do the fast thing and we'll do the cheap thing, and you know it's not going to be the best beef on earth. What the fine casual like Shake Shack and others are doing is basically saying, we realize that you can only have two, but maybe we'll do it 0.65 plus 0.65 plus 0.65. The quality of the beef at Shake Shack, hormone-free, antibiotic-free, is the exact same beef we use at Union Square Cafe. The chocolate is what we use at Gramercy Tavern. If you're willing to give up the reservation and the tableside service, we'll charge you a whole lot less money to eat the same quality food.
Now there are a lot of copycats, too. You're also known for leading the movement to eliminate tipping. Why against tipping? Because in Europe, the service is included on the bill, and people are very happy with that approach?
We are eliminating tipping in our restaurants because we think that it's been a contributor to the disparity between, because of laws that prevent tips to be shared with the kitchen workers, it's created an increasing disparity between what a restaurant worker can make in the front of the house and one can make in the back of the house. So we also want to be transparent with our guests. The price you pay on the menu covers everything.
And now you're faced with a proposed class action lawsuit in California that was filed in federal court that names a number of restaurants, including you, because they say that the no tipping policy is a part of a conspiracy to charge diners more than their food.
Well, I've just never been prouder of taking a path that we think is the right thing. And I've said many times, I don't care which other restaurants do or don't do it. We're doing it because we think it's right for our company.
And I'm assuming that most of your employees are happy because they don't have to worry about somebody under-tipping. On the other hand, if somebody wants to give them a bigger tip, they still can do it.
Well, the best thing that this does for our employees in the front of the house is that they can depend upon a base hourly income that's dramatically higher than minimum wage, plus earn a share of the revenue each night. So they retain the incentive to sell, but they don't have to wonder from day to day, how much will I make tonight?
There was also resentment in many restaurants I've heard for the front and the kitchen, because people come and work in the kitchen way before the waiters ever come in, and then they stay later and they don't get any of the tips unless there's tip sharing, as there is in a few places.
I go to restaurants. Most restaurants I go to have tipping, and I try to be a generous tipper. That's different than how we want to run our business for our employees. And frankly, if you were an employee who would only be nice to somebody in the expectation and hope of a better tip, you probably wouldn't have the emotional skills we would have wanted to hire anyway.
So how do you tell your customers that tipping is not required in a restaurant?
We've got literature that you get when you get your bill, which I would argue is too late. It's on our website, which is arguably irrelevant to when you're in the restaurant. On our menus themselves, it makes it very clear. Hospitality included in all pricing, no tipping.
Isn't one of your newest Shake Shacks testing a concept in New York City that won't have any staff members taking orders of money? Human contact?
Oh, correct and incorrect. Huh. I was just at the brand new Astor Place Shake Shack before I came on your show.
I've never tipped a robot, so you, that wouldn't be a problem.
I presume you have many, many times at the bank used an ATM or many times at the airport either used a kiosk or used the app on your phone rather than waiting in line. And we're experimenting this. We decided, since we know that the hourly rate in New York and other places is going up to $15 an hour in the next couple of years, we decided to self-impose it early. So we're paying our entire staff at Astor Place $15 an hour, and we're trying to learn how to do that business properly. So when I went to Shake Shack today, I'd say 20% of the people doing their ordering were using their app. The other 80% were using the kiosk. We had a swarm of staffers who were involved with hospitality, not involved with the transaction of taking your order and making change, but rather the task of making you feel welcome. And I felt really good about it.
We've talked in the past about what led you to close the original Union Square Cafe. Are you happy with the new one, even though it isn't really on Union Square?
It's close enough to Union Square that I feel we can credibly call it Union Square Cafe. It's on 19th Street, so it's three blocks away from actually, it's only two blocks away from the north side of the square. We have no trouble wheeling our vegetables and fruits back and forth from the green market.
Concept is the same?
It's exactly the same, only I think the food is better because we have a real kitchen to cook out of. And it's so nice that I have to say, as much as I cried my eyes out literally on the sidewalk the night we closed the original on 16th Street, I don't think I've looked back once.
Do you remember what Julia Child ate that first time?
Of course I do. She had short ribs with mashed turnips and two bottles of Beaujolais. And I don't think I had more than one glass out of those two bottles. She packed it away.
Danny Meyer, congratulations on all the awards. This latest one, the Julia Child Award, you're just the third recipient. Any new restaurants opening other than more Shake Shacks?
It's funny you say that because we are opening Vini e Fritti right this minute on 30th Street between Park and Madison, and that is going to be a Roman wine bar with fried snacks.
And lovers of barbecue are grateful for you for opening the first real barbecue restaurant in Manhattan, Blue Smoke, the first one to actually make its own barbecue. Danny, thank you so much for being on our show.
Always a pleasure, Leonard. Thank you.